everyone. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is episode number 95. We are 5 episodes away from 100.
Epic.
We are going to do something awesome. We are going to come out to all of our listeners' homes and do a live podcast in their home.
All 4 of you, so it won't really take us that long.
Yeah, you know.
Even though we're going to be hitting episode 100, we've probably been doing this for, 2 years now? At least? Because we've skipped some weeks. And
Yeah, it's probably been a good 2 years.
Yeah. I wonder what the anniversary date for the podcast is.
I don't know.
Have to figure that
out. Go back to the early days, yeah.
Maybe we should do a highlight. We'll go through, we'll listen to all 95 podcasts all over again and do a highlight reel.
Montage. I am going to vote that I not be the person to listen to all 95 of those episodes.
Actually, we're just going to go week by week and we're going to review each podcast.
It's so meta.
Well, thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dr. Venkman, and today we have, our panelists, obviously, who are joining us. We've got Mazer in the house.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Mazer?
I've tried, for the first time, white hot chocolate today.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even know they made white hot chocolate, so you just...
And it's in, drink form. Though,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. How was it?
Well, my wife pretty much just made it up. She was like, what if I... Because usually with hot chocolate, you have milk and chocolate. Hot chocolate.
Okay, so the follow-up question is, do you use bits of, Hershey's bar instead of marshmallows to offset the color of the white and the...
No, you just use white chocolate.
No. I mean, in normal hot chocolate, you would punctuate that with marshmallows. But in white hot chocolate, do you just stick pieces of chocolate in it?
I don't think it actually needs anything because the flavor is sugary enough.
Right.
White chocolate usually is. So,
was it good?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. White chocolate, everybody.
Yeah, white hot chocolate.
Try it.
It's copyrighted by Mila Kane. You can't steal that.
I think that she might try to make that her nickname. I don't know.
White hot chocolate. At least on the basketball court.
Ben P., how are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well, sir. I'm still kind of riding high off the screening of The Fighter that we saw last night.
Yes, it was a really awesome screening, and we will talk about that. Great experience, though. Great movie.
Indeed.
P. Vader was there.
I was. It was pretty awesome. I have to say, I was glad that I got to go.
And I was glad that you got to go as well. P. Vader found me in the lobby looking like a lost puppy wondering.
Yeah. He was staring right past me. I'm like, hey, Venkman, it's me.
But he was
looking at the liquid butter station.
The liquid butter wasn't coming out of the thing, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. They're out of butter? And
Quote butter.
I went to go ask someone at the counter, and he's like, hey, where's your butter at? Because nothing's coming out. And then I turn around, and I see some lady back over there.
And it was P. Vader.
Pouring liquid, there was butter there now all of a sudden. I don't know what happened, but so I went back over, got my butter on my popcorn, and P. Vader escorted me back to my seat.
Good story.
Thank you.
I don't know what it is about you, Venkman, when you're going to watch a film, but for some reason, you lose peripheral vision. Because the amount of times that I have met you at the movie theater and you were surprised I was there when I casually just walked up and you're just like, how did you get there? I'm like, I just walked like a regular person. I didn't sneak up or anything.
Everything just blurs around me when I'm in a movie theater. I don't know what it is, but I'm looking at movie posters. I'm looking at TV trailers. I'm looking at...
You go into
eyes on the prize, man.
I am just
tunnel vision.
The zone when I'm in the movie theater. I don't know what's going on, so I just know I'm there to watch a movie. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, moving on to the box office numbers for this weekend. I just go through the top five real quick. Megamind came in at number one at $46 million. So congratulations to DreamWorks on another successful animated film. I have not read any reviews on this. I don't know how it's being received. I haven't seen it yet, but I'll probably end up seeing it in the next couple days. Have any of you seen it yet?
I did get a chance to see it. I've read a couple reviews, and they've been kind of lukewarm to to average, I guess. So I think we'll probably end up talking about it next week. I think Mazer's going to get a chance to go check it out. If right, not, then I'll good. Just talk about it next week briefly.
All right. Due Date came in at number two. This is the Zach Galifianakis, Robert Downey Jr. comedy. Came in at $32.6 million. Not bad for an R-rated comedy on an opening weekend, I guess. Number three, Four Colored Girls. Four Colored Girls, not Four Colored Girls. Can get confusing. $19.4 million. That's the Tyler Perry movie. So those are those all opened up this weekend. So you have the top three opening weekend movies, you know, hitting the box office strong. Then number four, we've got Red at 8.6. Number five, Saw 3D, 7.7. And yeah, so that's your top five. Anybody see Saw 3D yet?
No.
I don't plan to.
No.
You know, I think it's interesting that Red, in its fourth week, beat Paranormal Activity and Saw.
Yeah, in their second and third.
Maybe.
I guess once we're out of October, the kind of allure of Paranormal Activity goes away.
That's true.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's interesting, though, because a lot of people on Twitter I saw a lot of people asking, how was Red? And this was just this week. People were like, hey, I'm thinking about going to see Red. Do you guys, should I go see it? And, you know, we get that every once in a while, but after the movie's been out for 3-4 weeks, it was kind of odd seeing people coming out and saying, hey, should I go see this movie? So I guess there's something in the air and people are interested in it.
Maybe they did some kind of advertising push, like a second.
Maybe. I have no idea. But that's your top five.
Nice.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it? So we're going to move on to our new game, Connect 3. And this week, I have the opportunity to
try to stump the rest of the channel.
Now, all right, screw it. These are probably... I made these pretty easy. Maybe. I don't know. I guess we'll see, right?
Yeah,
all right.
Easy is a relative thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, first one... Now, do you want me to give you hints on whether it's an actor or
no,
director?
No, just say the names.
Just
then
give
we'll...
us the three. If we don't get it after three, then give us the fourth clue.
Yeah. All right, sounds good. Joaquin Phoenix.
Alfred Hitchcock. Sorry,
yes.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Bruce Willis. Adrian Brody.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, see? Easy, right?
Nice.
Okay, so that's a warm-up. That's a warm-up, all right? Now we're going to go into something a little maybe harder. I don't know. We'll see. You ready? Right. Okay. Braveheart. We Were Soldiers. Pearl Harbor.
Huh.
It's the writer.
See, the problem is I haven't seen We Were Soldiers, so I don't know what this connection is going to be.
Something Wallace? Willie?
You're very close. It's Randall Wallace.
There we go.
You were close. You were on the right track.
William Wallace.
Yeah,
you win that.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were
going for. But, yeah. I was like, I couldn't remember his first name for the... I mean, okay. I'll take that as a half point. Cause that
yeah, was no, right. Definitely. And you said it was the writer, and you got his last name right, so I think that counts.
Yeah, that's pretty close. All right, last one. Ready?
Oh, yeah.
Star Trek. J.J. Abrams, Star Trek. Mission Impossible 3. Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs.
What?
Ray Romano.
No.
I think I know this. Simon Pegg?
Yeah!
Uh-huh.
Nice!
I've never seen the Ice Age.
Oh, yeah, either, that was just a guess, because I know that he played, Tom Cruise's kind of sidekick at IMF, excuse me, in the third Mission Impossible, and obviously he was Scotty in Star Trek.
You had no
idea
about Ice Age connection.
But that was the only guy that I could think of that was in the other two, so. Process of elimination coming through.
Nice. So there you have it.
Nice.
Sweet.
Everyone got it right.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so let's move on to our movie reviews of the week. Let's see, Due Date came out.
If you're going to travel with me to Los Angeles, I got to give you a couple guidelines. Number one, don't ask me a single question.
What's your favorite color? What age did you lose your virginity? Do you like hot dogs?
I once ate a foot-long corn dog on a nude beach. I'll never do that again.
Number two.
If you're allergic to waffles, don't eat waffles.
Then don't take me to a Waffle House.
If I miss the birth of my child, I'm gonna choke you out with your own scarf. Wrap that thing around your neck and choke you out.
Seems a bit drastic.
Holy moly, it's like I'm traveling with a child!
Did you use the restroom? Good point, I need to take a pee-pee.
I have not seen Due Date yet. Have any of you seen Due Date yet?
I have.
I have as well.
Okay. Well, tell me about it.
Yeah, go ahead, Mason.
Tell our listeners about it.
What did you think?
It is a movie... I watched this with Millie Kane, and afterwards we came out, and for some reason, like, the movie got under my skin and I walked out a little bit kind of probably agitated. We all love the film What About Bob, right?
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And Bob, Bob is hilarious and does interesting things, and everybody loves Bob except for his doctor, played by Richard Dreyfuss.
Yep.
Due Date, Galifianakis, everyone hates this guy, and he's extremely annoying and funny, but only to the audience, and it's, you just feel so much for Robert Downey's character, because you're just like, I could not stand like 15 or 20 minutes with this guy, going across the country with him for like 5 days that this
yeah something
movie,
like something, that
yeah so I don't think I could have done it.
Was it funny? Did you laugh a lot?
Oh, it was funny. It was just I
it was just frustrating.
It was very, very frustrating.
Okay.
Because everything that he could have done wrong to mess things up, he did do wrong, but in many ways something like you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
They did keep it pretty interesting, I'll say.
Okay, that was my next question. Did they keep the comedy interesting? Did they keep people...
Kind of. I mean, it's like a road trip movie, you know? There's only so many things. It's
exactly.
Like it's a tried and true genre, and you know that ridiculous things are going to happen, and you know there's probably going to be, like, a trippy drug scene, and you know that the cops are going to get involved somehow, and you know that... You know, there's going to be a car crash and all these different things that are kind of staples of the genre. You know this stuff's going to happen. It's just about watching these particular actors and this director take on, you know, and show their take on that kind of genre. So, to that degree, it's entertaining, I guess. I didn't particularly care for it. I mean, I thought it was okay. It just wasn't... It just wasn't good. It wasn't.
I noticed it's not getting good reviews. I've seen a few negative reviews on it. It's not doing too well on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think it's what Mazur touched on, you know, like the even Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which this movie is probably, you know, loosely based on, had, like, a likable protagonist. And this movie, like, hardly any of the characters are likable. Even Robert Downey Jr., I didn't really feel for him that much because he's kind of a douche.
Yeah.
Like, he's a guy who has, like, anger management issues and stuff that he just lets... Even when Galifianakis is doing these ridiculous things, like, early on in the movie that aren't really that big of a deal, Downey gets, like, completely flustered and, like, takes it to a level that's unnecessary. So, it was all right. I don't know if I would recommend for people seeing it in the theaters. I don't think it deserves that kind of...
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Because that would save me money.
Yeah, I mean, I would say save your money. It's hard to recommend movies that are just kind of like, okay, if you didn't really like it.
Yeah. And even then, like, there's a moment in the film where they could have just, we're clear sailing. There's so many times in this film where it's like it just seemed like they could have just ended the film, yet they find some way to derail it in the most ridiculous way. I'm just one-worded Mexico, and
There's, like, in movies like Harold and Kumar, you know, the first one where they're trying to go into White Castle, or even, like, Get Him to the Greek, which we talked about earlier this year, like, there's a clear destination in mind, and there's a clear destination in mind here, but the path that they take to get there is not nearly as entertaining as those other movies.
Like, oh, yeah, definitely.
The dynamic between the characters is fine, between Downey and Galifianakis, but it's just not as enjoyable to watch as something like Harold and Kumar, where those are, like, likable characters, or even Get Him the Greek, where Jonah Hill and Russell Brand are kind of likable but ridiculous too. I don't know. I just think if you're looking for, like, a buddy road trip comedy, there's a lot better out there than Due Date.
Yeah.
What's better, the movie Road Trip or Due Date?
It's been a long time since I've seen Road Trip, but I would probably say Road Trip.
Yeah.
I was just asking because, you know, it's a road trip movie called Road Trip.
Right. Yeah, I think just, like, plot alone, like, makes a little bit more sense in Road Trip. Like, their motivations, like, they're trying to get to go across the country to get this sex tape before the girlfriend discovers it. Right? That's what happens in that movie? Okay, all right, making sure. And this one, it's just, like, Michelle Monaghan plays Downey's wife, but she's, like, criminally underused, because I love her as an actress, and I was like, okay, cool, Downey and Michelle Monaghan, it's gonna be, like, a Kiss Kiss Bang Bang reunion, because that's, like, one of my favorite movies of the past decade, and then she's just, like, barely in it. She's got, like, maybe 10 total minutes of screen time. Jamie Foxx is supposedly in it, you know, according to the trailers, but he's, like, touch and go in and out in, like, four or five minutes.
Yeah,
like,
almost a cameo.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a movie that...
Add it to your Netflix queue.
Yeah, sure.
And then, when there's nothing else to watch, watch
Oh, wow. So there you go, guys.
And also one other thing. Downey called it the second greatest movie he's ever made. Just take that and flush it down the toilet. Like, don't even remotely put your expectations that high, because I believed him foolishly when I heard that. I was like, this is going to be really great. But
what's interesting is
when they say stuff like that, it makes me wonder if they just had such a fun experience just making the movie on the set. You know, that they just had a fun time on the set. Everyone's screwing around and just having fun making the movie. And it's like, maybe that's what he meant. It's like, I had the best time. It's the best time making this movie.
Yeah, and that's possible. I mean, I'm not calling him a liar, but probably I just, you know.
Being on set with Galifianakis all day long would probably be pretty funny.
Sure,
it probably
not,
would
you know?
Be a lot of fun. But the film itself just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so there you have it. That's Due Date. Netflix it. 127 Hours, Danny Boyle's new film. Came out limited release last week, or this week. It is opening wide this coming week.
Hey! You lost? I'm a guide. What do you say?
So the guidebook says that the route's through here. I know a better way.
All you have to remember is that everything will be okay.
I don't think we figured in his day at all.
Kristen! Help! Megan!
I had a chance to see it, and I know that... Ben had a chance to see it as well. Did you see it, P. Vader?
No, I didn't get a chance to see this one.
Well, that's a shame.
Okay. A shame. Tell me about it.
Well, do you like Danny Boyle movies?
I like Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay, that's a great movie. It won an Academy Award. So, right on track there, buddy.
Yeah, I'm not totally sold on his whole filmography.
Okay.
Slumdog just kind of sticks out to me.
All right. Well, I've been a fan of Danny Boyle since 28 Days Later.
I've been a fan.
He did Sunshine, which I really love Sunshine. And
I've kind of retroactively been a fan. Like I discovered Trainspotting. Him. Yeah, Trainspotting. I went yes. back and saw Trainspotting and really yeah. enjoyed that.
Yeah, that movie was awesome. So yeah, I've enjoyed all of his movies, and so I was looking forward to 127 Hours. I liked what I saw in the trailer. I liked James Franco as an actor taking on this role. I thought, okay, this is a great role for him to be able to push himself and it's pretty much most of the movie's a one man show, you know. Mm-hmm. So just everything kind of came together, and it just looked like a great film. So I went and saw it, and yes, the movie blew me away. I absolutely loved what Boyle did with the story of Aaron. What's his last name?
Ralston.
He really did a wonderful job telling the story of what happened to this guy, and the way he filmed it and everything was just... thought it was done brilliantly, and it was a very intense movie. When he gets stuck in there, it's like edge of your seat from there on out the rest of the film. And even leading up to that point, when you see how this guy kind of lives his life, and it's just was so interesting and fun to watch, you know, this guy just be so excited about, you know, the stuff that he's into, nature and hiking and mountain biking and all this, you know, being in the great outdoors, not having a care in the world, you know, not telling anybody where he's going or, you know, just doing his own thing, you know. I really enjoyed the film.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, like, the way that Boyle is able to kind of infuse this story, which is, you know, essentially a trapped-in-one-location type of thing, with so much energy, and that kind of visceral filmmaking that he's been known for over the past decade or whatever. This movie is really awesome. I think it's probably going to end up on my top 10 of the year list.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably going to end up on mine as well.
And I think, you know, it's kind of similar, it is and it isn't, to Buried, the Ryan Reynolds one.
That's what I was going to ask about, how it compares.
Yeah, even though the two films took place in an isolated single location, well, Buried, the whole movie was an isolated single location, whereas 127 Hours, you see him interact with people, he's... traveling, he's got a lot of space to work with until the moment where he doesn't. But still, I thought each story was just completely different, and the way it was filmed and everything, I just thought the two films were very different from each other.
Yeah, I mean they totally are. I just meant kind of from the outside looking in, you know, the kind of one location type of thing, because a lot of 127 Hours does take place in this one particular spot, but the movies handle that totally differently. It's kind of interesting to me because the very beginning of 127 Hours has all this imagery of people, you know, in society, yes. and just, like, moving people and, like, stuff going really quickly, and Aaron Ralston wakes up, and he, you know, wakes up really early in the morning to go on this hiking excursion or
it's
whatever.
It's still dark and, outside yeah. when he wakes up.
And
know?
He's, like, slowly driving away from society, and he's passing all these fast food places, and then, you know, he gets out into the desert, and he's riding his bike, and he goes past, like, these abandoned, kind of rusted out buildings and stuff with nobody in. So he's getting further and further and further away from society and further detached and isolated. And he gets yep. to this point, you know, he meets these girls and has this really great kind of opening scene with them.
I loved when he came in contact with those girls and the characters when they all came together and they just, even though it wasn't that long in the film, mm-hmm. it was really, they all had really good chemistry with each other. It was really fun watching them, you know, work together and, you know, mess around in the canyons of Utah or wherever it was they were at.
Yeah.
But, I really enjoyed that. I wish it would have lasted longer, but obviously the movie had to go in the direction that it went.
Right. And I mean, it's a powerful moment too, because these are the last two people of this society that he's been trying to escape from that he comes in contact with before he gets completely isolated. And then it comes to a point where he's alone with a video camera in this canyon after the rock traps his arm. So he's like, and he's recording these video diaries as the movie goes on.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of final messages to his family and stuff like that. Well, you know why, but it's just like, it's interesting to me that this movie takes that kind of escaping from society to isolation, and then once he gets there, he's like yearning so badly to get back to society with this, like, you know, he wants to be connected to people with this video camera, and then, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the spoilers for real life, he lives, so he gets out of the canyon, and then, like, returns to society, and that's what Danny Boyle has said in interviews over and over in the past couple weeks, is, like, the movie begins and ends with people, and that is, could not be any more different than the way that Buried handled kind of similar subject matter.
Yeah.
And this movie is, like, so, it's kind of an, like, a affirming, like, life-affirming, inspirational movie.
Oh, very inspirational. Yeah,
and,
definitely.
Like, you know, I was talking to P. Vader about it, and he was wondering, like, how gruesome the actual, not decapitation, but arm cutting off sequence is. And it's bad. It's kind of violent, obviously, but it's not, you know, it's only a few minutes of the movie. A lot of it is just, like, kind of build up to it and stuff like that. And then it really is more of, like, a willpower thing, you know? Like, it makes you feel good that he does this. In my crowd, people applauded when he actually, like, broke away from his own arm, you know?
Well, yeah, I just, you know, you see, you've been reading these reports online and seeing on the news that people are, you know, passing out in theaters, they can't take it, they're throwing up, they're leaving the theaters due to this sequence. And before I saw this movie, I was hearing this stuff. So in my mind, I was like, okay, this is going to be pretty bad, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, when I did see it and it was happening in front of me, I was like, and maybe it's just me and all the horror movies I watch, but and I've become desensitized to that kind of thing. It really didn't bother me. It wasn't as bad as it seemed.
Like, it's not as bad as, like, one of the Saw movies even, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Were definitely. People's reactions to that? Wait, were those the screenings?
Those were the festival screenings, I believe.
Was do we know if it's the same cut of those scenes?
I think so.
I read that they didn't edit anything out from what they already showed. So
okay.
Now in my screening, there were a couple people that did get up and walk out during the scene, and you know. I think the one part that got me the most is when there's that point where you're there's a point when you're cutting your arm off,
right?
When you get to that nerve.
Oh yeah, man, that was, you know, that was tough to watch.
that was probably the toughest part to watch, because I've had a root canal before, and when they go in and they start drilling and that drill hits the nerve in your tooth, I can't really relate to what it would feel like in the arm, but I can relate what it feels like in my
talking about it, like my spine is just like freaking out. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And the way that Danny Boyle did that with the ringing and the shaking and the madness of the camera is like, that's how I felt when I was getting my root canal, you know? Every time they hit that nerve, it was that screeching, squealing pain of death.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what it was like, when he had with that freaking dull knife.
Yeah.
That dull knife that he'd been chipping away at a rock at. You know, there's like nothing there, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And to cut through that nerve is just, that was probably the most difficult part of it to watch. But after going through that and seeing what he had to do, and he did break off of that, and you see him stumble back away from his arm, you feel a sigh of relief for the guy.
Yeah.
You're just like, thank you, he's free. And you feel like that you are, that you're free as well. That, like, okay, let's see where he takes it from here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think, James Franco, this is probably the best performance I've ever seen him give.
Definitely.
I think he's a lock for at least a nomination for Best Actor.
He's gotta be.
I don't know if he'll win, but he did really, really great work that deserves to be rewarded somehow. I don't know if that is going to come in an Oscar win or maybe a Golden Globe or something like that, but he did a really, really great job. If you guys are James Franco fans in the least and kind of worried about the subject matter, I would say bite the bullet and, like, go see the movie anyway, because he does such a great job here.
I highly recommend you go see the movie.
Yeah.
Even if that one scene's going to get you, if you need to, close your eyes,
yeah,
whatever. Because
the rest of it's totally worth it.
Get through it, because, the rest of the movie is so worth it to watch. So, go see it. Definitely go see it. It's one of the best movies of the year. You can't miss out on it.
Yeah, and the one other thing that I wanted to bring up is the score. Danny Boyle, he reteams with A.R. Rahman, who's the guy who did the score for Slumdog Millionaire. And, they use the guitar mostly as the kind of concentrated main focal instrument or whatever. And the music was just so great in this movie, man. There's a part where, like, Aaron Ralston is trapped in this canyon, and there's, like, he gets 15 minutes of sunlight every morning, so it shows the sun kind of streaming in, and it doesn't even cover his whole body. He's kind of, like, reaching out with his leg and stuff, trying to get this warmth going through him. And the music there, like, switches to this kind of acoustic, really warm tones and stuff, and then there's, like, this really, really kind of intense and affecting, like, flash flood sequence, and the music just switches to, like, this electric, like, hard, not hard rocking, like a Creed or something, but, just very intense, very electric, like, kind of overdrive guitar.
Aggressive.
Yeah, very aggressive. And then, like the stuff that Venkman was talking about earlier with the nerve scenes and stuff, they just crank up the feedback, and every time he even touches one of those nerves, it's like a live action game of Operation going on. Like, they A.R. Rahman and Danny Boyle knew exactly what they were doing, and they did a fantastic job. And, like, aside from the sound effects and stuff too, just the music overall for the whole thing is really, really great.
And it's just really weird watching the movie and keeping in mind that this is based on a true story. And it's incredible that this guy went through this ordeal, survived. You know, he did what he did to live. And it's just incredible how, when you are pushed to the boundaries like that, the things that you can do to, if you want to, keep living and keep moving on in life.
Yeah.
It's just a very inspirational film, it's great, great movie.
Definitely.
So go see it. And then yesterday, Ben, Pete Vader, and myself went to the world premiere screening of The Fighter at the Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood, California.
This is my younger brother.
You gotta help me finish this.
Taught him everything he knows.
You don't want to see where this fight is headed. Turn on over.
But we're still his training.
I have a fight next week. But after I win, I'm going to start making good money so you can live with me more days, okay?
Good luck, Daddy.
Don't hold your breath, Casey.
Bye, baby.
You pave streets, right?
Yeah, I do. And I'm a fighter.
I heard you were a stepping stone.
Oh, I mean, I had a few tough fights, but the next fight's going to show who I am.
Yeah, and he's going to lose that one, too. So move that sugar ass and give
him a... Don't disrespect her.
Mickey Ward is 31 years old. He's here because he needs the money.
Look at the size of that guy.
He's got 20 pounds on me, Dickie.
You don't fight, nobody gets paid.
Wow, was that the world premiere?
Yeah, it was. It was the first time anybody's ever seen it.
Yep.
Nice.
which is cool, you know, because
that slipped past me somehow.
Well, yeah, I didn't know it until afterwards, but that's like, you know, that's the first world premiere I've ever attended. We got to walk on the red carpet going up and stuff. It was like totally weird, like very surreal. You read about that stuff all the time.
Coming up with cameras and taking pictures of me. I was like, what is going on?
They're like, guys, I'm just trying to find the liquid butter, okay?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, we get in there. We get our seats. Mark Wahlberg comes up and introduces the film, throws out, you know, Marky Mark joke.
That was pretty great.
Yeah, it was.
It was pretty funny at the beginning. And, you know, just kind of comes up and introduces the film. Well, I should have probably also mentioned that we had a screen legend sitting behind us.
Yes, Robert Duvall himself.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Of course, none of us got the guts to go up and say anything to him.
Leave the dude alone, man. He's earned it.
I know, right? So yeah, that it was a cool experience to be there. As for the movie, I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm interested to hear what P. Vader has to say about this, because we talked about it a little bit, kind of walking home and stuff, but I haven't really gotten your... Now that we've had a little bit of time for it to settle, I want to know what you think about it.
And that's the thing. I feel like I need some more time to digest it.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, we're still pretty soon after the viewing.
Like, I definitely liked the movie. You know, it's just not...
It's to what degree? That's what you're trying to discover.
Not even, like... It's if I had to rate it give it a grade, I'd probably give it a B, a solid B. it's just not to me your typical sports sort of comeback movie.
It's not. Yeah. That's one of the things that I really liked about it.
Yeah. Which, you know, I don't know if I was looking for that or not, but to me the fact that it was missing, I guess, leads me to believe that I kind of was looking for that. It is kind of a comeback movie in sorts.
Mm-hmm. Now the trailer kind of, you know, gives you the impression that it is that inspirational comeback movie that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's the sports and the boxing in the film, actually, I feel it was more of a backdrop for a bigger story.
Yeah.
You had a couple stories in here that I thought were really interesting. You had the Mickey story.
Yeah.
Of, you know, kind of coming from a losing boxer and working his way up to, you know, a championship boxer. And then you've got his brother, Dickie, who is struggling, who used to be a famous boxer. He ended up beating Sugar Ray Leonard, only he flushed his boxing career down the toilet and got hooked on crack. And, you know, the second part of the movie kind of deals with him and his issues of, you know, fighting his problems and what he's going through. So you've got these two, you know, and on top of that, there's the family.
Yeah,
family every time issues. They came up on screen, I just wanted to smack them around.
Yeah, they're pretty good at being dislikable.
It's so selfish and it's just
kind of like narrow-minded.
But it was real. I felt like it was real. I think there's situations like that all the time, like happening everywhere. Not to that degree of like infamy with boxing and that kind of level of professionalism and career interference and all that. But just in life, you know, there are families like that that just have to. like contract on themselves, like go into their turtle shell and just rely solely on themselves and can't, you know, trust anybody, can't do anything. And that was just like, this movie is just like an extreme example of that. And it's, you know, it's Mark Wahlberg as Mickey trying to...
Irish Mickey Ward.
Yeah, trying to step out of this turtle shell and just, like, live up to his potential. And his family is trying so hard to hold him back the whole time.
His family has been managing his boxing career his whole life. And they're putting him in situations he shouldn't be in. They're holding back his potential, you know, and it's... You see him struggling with the, because everyone else is making the decisions for him. Yeah. He's not making any decisions for himself. It's not until he meets Charlene, played by Amy Adams, who becomes his girlfriend, that he actually, you know, steps up to the plate and tells his family, like, you guys are nuts. Yeah. And I'm not listening to you anymore.
Yeah, he needs that outside perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amy Adams did a really great job. I think she has a chance of getting nominated for Best Supporting Actress. I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's one of her best roles. So,
yeah, and it's like, it's one of those where it, you can tell that this role was something else at various stages in the script. Like, it was clearly just a girlfriend role that didn't really matter, but they've kind of gone through and hyped it up a little bit, because she plays like a really strong female character but is still kind of beholden to the man, if you will. Like, they're, you know, she's not a feminist icon. She's got, like, most of the decisions that she makes in the movie are based on her relationship with Mark Wahlberg. So,
yeah,
you know, there's that test, I forget what it's called, but there's that test that, like, for women in movies where, like, you ask a series of questions about, like, whether their actions are inspired by a male character or motivated by, like, a love interest or something like that, to prove if they're, like, a legitimate female character. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Amy Adams' character would pass that test, but that doesn't mean that she doesn't do a great job, because she does, and that this character is not a strong female character, because she is. And she has a really good influence on Mickey throughout the film, and is seemingly the only sane person in the movie, because even he
really,
like, kind of puts this own blindfold on him to, like, you know, the family itself kind of holds this blindfold over him, and he, you know, he doesn't want to betray his own family, so he just kind of gives in to their destructive ways, and she's the only one to kind of pull him out of it.
So destructive.
Yeah.
I mean, his mom was just...
She was great. That was Melissa Leo. She did a fantastic job.
And, you know, and he's got, how many sisters? 7 sisters.
Yeah.
And every time they come up on screen, you're just like, oh my gosh.
I'm
so uncomfortable watching these people right now.
It was like something on a Dr. Phil episode.
Yeah, it's like you were actually sitting in the living room with these people while they were fighting, and you're just like, ay, ay, ay.
I think that you guys are kind of hitting on probably what I enjoyed most about the movie, and that was the individual actors' performances. We mentioned that Amy Adams could be nominated for an Oscar. I think the same could be said for Christian Bale as well, for best supporting actor. I forgot he was Christian Bale at one point. I was like, the dude's kind of out of his mind in this movie. He does such a good job becoming Dickie Eklund, Mickey Ward's brother, that I forgot that he was Batman, you know, and Bruce Wayne.
No, it's true, and he does that in all of his films. He loses him in all the movies he does. He loses himself in the characters that he plays. There's just something about this guy that he ceases to be Christian Bale.
Yeah,
you know, and he's all, you know, he's just a completely different person than any other movie you've seen him in before, and it was. His performance in this blew my mind, and it was just one of those things where I was like, this guy's going to be nominated for sure,
yeah.
And I won't be surprised if he wins, because he gave one of his best performances ever as well.
Yeah, he did a really great job. And, like, also the physicality required. Like, I think he lost, like, 30 or 40 pounds or something to do it.
Yeah, he lost
it,
30 pounds for it.
He looks like this kind of just bone-dry, skinny, like, borderline unhealthy dude. You know, it reminds you of The Machinist, I think, the movie that he lost all that weight for in between Batman Begins
or
whatever.
Not as bad as The Machinist.
Right, yeah.
That was just freaky.
But, like, just that kind of... You can tell that, like, it's the same guy who has that level of determination, who will just do whatever it takes to get this part and kind of do what he needs to do. And it's really, you know, we were talking about it right after we walked on the movie, like, it's the kind of role that the Academy loves to reward, you know. So I really think he's got a great shot at taking down Best Supporting Actor, because there haven't really been that many other standout performances that I've seen anyway this year that are that obviously kind of cater towards the Academy's taste, and still, aside from all of that bias, just great performances on their own. And I think this one is one that kind of rides both of those lines.
I think he's going to have some stiff competition from Kevin James in Grown Ups.
It was
also a physical performance.
Yeah.
Dickie's story in this was probably more interesting for me than
Mickey Rourke's.
Mickey's
or
story.
Mickey Ward, sorry.
Yeah, because when, you know, when there's a point where Dickie is out trying to get money to support his brother's boxing career.
Yeah,
you know, and he's not necessarily doing the most legal thing, doing it, and ends up getting caught and being thrown in the slammer.
Yeah.
And it's when he's in there that he realizes what his life has become. And this, through the whole movie, he has a documentary crew from HBO following him around. And he thinks that they're doing a documentary on his comeback as a boxer, when in reality, they're doing a documentary on
crack addiction. Basically.
Crack addiction. So it's like, and he doesn't realize that until the documentary he actually sees the documentary.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This movie, I mean, the part definitely allows him to cover a lot of ground as an actor too. So he does a really great job.
Yeah. It's definitely an inspirational movie. It's got some emotion behind it. It's got power. It's got everything I think a good movie needs to be good.
I think that I would, if I were to give it one of those ratings, I would probably give it the same thing, though. I think it's missing something.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure what it is. And it might just be that the story is a little bit predictable because we know how it's going to end. You know, it's based on a real life story, so you know it's going to end well. And it might just be that kind of...
Well, yeah, that's what's interesting. Like, the family where they're... I think it's almost more challenging to see the family's motivation to keep him down when you know he becomes successful.
Yeah.
If you don't know he becomes successful, then maybe they seem more pragmatic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that, and, you know, there's just a couple things where you don't really... there's a couple moments that didn't really connect. Nothing specific, but just kind of general things that
How
were just
kind
of like... The score, I don't remember at all, to tell you the truth.
It was interesting. It was fine, but there were the soundtrack. There's
soundtrack music I liked a lot, because I remember the soundtrack specifically. I don't remember the score. What were you going to say, Beckman?
Well, I was going to say the soundtrack itself. It was. I don't think some of those songs existed during the time.
Yeah, they definitely did not.
Yeah, I thought it was an odd choice for the director to go with music that happened after this event took, you know, after this little life event.
It was weird because they mixed music that was set during that time with modern music. So it was like,
just pick
one or the other. But there was a kind of interesting mix. But, you know, regardless of that, just like whether those songs fit in the movie, I think they all did. They had like some Chili Pepper stuff. There was White Snakes, Here I Go Again. And then the How You Like Me Now, which is played in all those car commercials and stuff. That's like kind of an omnipresent song right now. By the group called The Heavy, I think.
It's on the trailer for Faster as well.
Yeah, okay, the Dwayne Johnson upcoming movie. But
okay, I'm just trying to pinpoint the... because, you know, this year we've had a lot of great scores, and like Inception just comes to mind. And,
yeah.
No, it won't live up to anything like that.
Yeah.
It's not...
I think the soundtrack is good, but the score itself is just like I couldn't remember a single piece of music that wasn't pre-created by another band. So, yeah.
But I thought Christian Bale and Mark Wahlberg had a really good connection in the movie. I thought they worked very well together. Mark Wahlberg did a great job. I mean, this guy was the only person to kind of stick with this movie throughout the years and trying to get it made. When they first went to do the movie, it was a $50 million budget, starred Matt Damon and Mark Wahlberg were going to star in the film. Matt Damon ended up dropping out. Darren Aronofsky was directing it at one point. After Matt Damon dropped out, Aronofsky, they brought in Brad Pitt to take on the role of Christian Bale's character, and then Brad Pitt fell off with Aronofsky, and then Wahlberg got together with a couple other financiers, and they were having trouble getting, you know, funding for the film. So they got Bale on, David O. Russell. They dropped the budget from $50 million to $20 million and made the movie.
Yeah, and I think they made it independently, too, and then Paramount's the one who's distributing it.
Exactly. But
that's, like, the huge irony of this movie, is that Wahlberg was the one who really put his kind of heart and soul into it, and you can tell when he came out and introduced it, like, he has a massive passion for this project.
Yeah.
But he's the one that nobody's really talking about, performance-wise. Like, he's completely overshadowed by the supporting performances, which is great for the movie, but not necessarily great for him on a personal level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it depends if you look at it as him trying to make the movie or him trying to get an Oscar.
Right, and I think he cares enough about the movie that he would take that, you know. Yeah. He would take a good movie over an award that's sitting on his shelf any day. Because he's so, you know, he grew up in Massachusetts. He met Mickey Ward when he was a kid, when he was like 18 or something. I read that today. Yeah. So he, you know, he has this really kind of intense relationship and very, you know, strong connection to the subject matter and stuff. So I think he was just happy to see the movie get made. He said that a couple times in his introduction or whatever, that he was just like really glad, you know, it wasn't easy to make this movie. So
I'm glad it got made too. I mean, I've been looking forward to it ever since I first heard it was going into production, so...
Yeah, it's interesting to think, like, what an Aronofsky version of this movie would have looked like, because I...
Yeah, it is.
You know, after seeing The Wrestler, like, you can see kind of the similarities between the way that Russell handled the story and the way Aronofsky might have handled it. Filming-wise, you know, shot selection-wise and stuff like that, but I don't know how much influence Aronofsky would have had over, like, changing the story around any, or if he would have, or, like... I don't know. It's kind of interesting to think about. It's one of those what-if scenarios, but...
Okay, so those are our reviews. Definitely go see The Fighter. It comes out on December 17th.
December 10th, I think.
I think it comes out limited December 10th.
Oh, okay.
Wide release on December 17th.
Right on.
So make sure to check that out. You guys are really... I highly recommend it. I enjoyed it, so...
I'll have to check that out after.
That's going
to
have competition with Tron, I was just about to say.
Well, I won't have that problem because I already saw it.
Way to be a douche.
As far as some of the geek news that is out there right now, we're just going to kind of quickly go through a couple little TV tidbits. The Walking Dead Season 2 has been, or The Walking Dead as a Season 2 now, officially.
All right.
I don't know if you guys watched the last episode, but it delivered the goods.
That thing, I think it was called Guts, right?
Yeah.
The second episode. That was pretty extreme.
Yeah.
P. Vader was talking to me about it after it aired, and he was saying that... What were you saying? Something
it was
about,
just,
like,
you know, if people were on the fence about whether they're going to watch the show or not, they probably lost a few that were kind of just on the fence, because it got pretty crazy, pretty intense. It definitely lived up to the episode title.
Yeah. My wife couldn't watch that part. She just covered her eyes.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
But she loves the story.
So. Yeah, it's
you know,
something...
and the thing is the story is just if you've I don't know if you've read the comic or not. If you have, you know what's coming. If not, then you're in for a treat because it only gets better from here on out.
That's good to hear.
It's not the story does not start slacking off. It doesn't get any worse. So if this this TV show keeps moving forward, it's just going to be getting better and better as it goes along. So.
And season 2, I think, got picked up for, like, 13 episodes
13
or something,
episodes.
Right? Okay.
First season has 6, 13, second season will have 13, so...
Cool.
Something to look forward to.
Sweet.
Other than that, Conan O'Brien. How about that guy, right?
He's back. Yes.
He's back. He's back and he's kicking ass.
We are firmly entrenched in the Team Coco camp, as if you guys will recall, we attended the rallies and all that kind of stuff when that was going on and the whole NBC fiasco, so we've been patiently waiting, just like everybody else, for the past, what has it been, like 9 months or something since Conan has been on the air, so he came back with his kind of triumphant return to basic cable, or triumphant entry into the basic cable world.
Good to see him take down the other guys.
Yeah, to whatever degree.
Letterman and Leno. And the fact that it's on cable, I think, at this point just goes to, you know, it's like, okay, there can be an audience for his show
exactly.
at that size. Now, will it be sustainable and stuff like that? I don't know. But I've got it. It's going to be permanently DVR'd from now on for me.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm going to watch every episode and hopefully try to, you know, watch some shows.
I mean, the format wise and stuff, it's pretty much the same thing.
But I mean, if you were like really familiar with his late night version, it was an hour and a half, and the Tonight was an hour, so it does feel like it's a lot more rushed. And there feels like a lot more commercials, but it's still pretty great.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. You know, it's the same formula, but it works, you know? So,
yeah.
It's just Conan,
why change something that's not broken?
Yeah. I just love watching the guy. He's such an entertaining personality. Like, regardless of, like, whatever. You know, we talk about Jimmy Fallon sometimes and, like, how he's not a very good interviewer. Conan, like, he just engages so well with everybody, like, whether or not because he gets off on a lot of tangents, Conan does, he gets into some ridiculous territory here and there, but it's always funny, like, it's always random and just kind of weird, and
it's always to find the laugh.
Yeah, and that's where I think he succeeds best.
Definitely. So keep tuning in. I know his ratings dropped a little bit after the first one, but not to the point where it's like, oh no, they're going to cancel his show.
Yeah, I think TBS probably has like a long-term thing in mind with him.
He's going to be fine, and you know.
And I think it's just, we've already expressed our feelings with his
exactly
what happened with NBC, but it's just, you know, it's all changing. I mean, we're all able to. I mean, DVR it. We're all able to. Like, for some reason, I'm getting it at 10 o'clock here. I don't know if that's happening with you guys, but
we're getting it at 11.
I'm getting it at 10 o'clock.
Huh, that's weird. We live in the same town. That's really bizarre.
So I'm watching Conan at 10 o'clock, and I think they're expanding their feed, so you might be able to watch him even earlier.
Huh.
So TBS might have like I think a West Coast and an East Coast feed at some point, so you might be able to watch Conan at like
7 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Other than that, movie's coming out this weekend, Morning Glory. That is the Harrison Ford,
Rachel
McAdams, and what's that?
Diane
Keaton.
And I'm just
Patrick Wilson, I think, too.
Some dude called Harrison Ford.
I don't know who that guy is. I'm not really looking forward to this one. I really don't need to see it.
I actually want to see it. It looks like it would just kind of be fun.
I like this, all of the actors except for Diane Keaton, who yeah. I don't hate. I just don't particularly like.
I love the actors too, but the movie just the story or anything just doesn't seem to interest me at all. So yeah.
Well, you don't like morning shows at all. So
no, I hate morning shows. It should all be canceled. Replaced with the Twilight Zone.
What a curmudgeon.
Skyline comes out. That's the new alien invasion sci-fi film where aliens come down from outer space and suck people up into their spaceships, and just they want to kill everybody.
Are you guys interested in seeing this? Anybody?
No. Not fully, but it's something to watch this weekend.
The special effects look like it'll be. It looks like it'll be a fun movie, but it looks like a big budget B sci-fi movie.
It looks like a TV show to me. It feels like Skyline, the premiere episode.
Yeah.
Right? The 2-hour premiere.
And everyone that stars in it are all TV actors.
Yeah, that's probably why. And the low budget and everything. I think if I were to see it, it would just be out of some sort of bizarre relationship to Comic-Con, because we saw like advertisements for it all over the place at Comic-Con this year.
Yeah.
And that was the first time it had ever been advertised anywhere. Like, we saw it up on this building, and like they released little like foam creatures that looked like people up into the sky.
Yeah.
It was just this weird kind of marketing thing. And I feel like if I went and saw it, I would see the title come up on screen and be like, oh, okay, cool, this reminds me of Comic-Con. And then I would be sitting there and have to endure the rest of the movie and be like, alright, this is a terrible decision. So
I like you've seen it in the trailer, and I like the concept is they play on our aliens use our own curiosity against us. Where they have a weapon that basically, if you look at it, you're pretty much dead. And
Ark of the Covenant, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. So like we all are, you know, rubberneck at like car accidents, and we can't not look at things. And if someone says don't look, you look.
Yeah.
So
maybe this is a relevant social commentary, is what you're saying.
It's gonna be interesting. I don't know, but that's pretty much like that's it, and then the rest of it, like probably like cliche alien action
like
film
C-list sci-fi. Yeah.
That they released a clip on Apple's trailer site, and I watched it, and I was just like, okay, that was probably supposed to hook me. It did not.
Oh, man.
I'm just basically counting down the days till Harry Potter and then Tron.
Yeah.
That's
exactly what
I have to look forward to.
The other movie coming out this weekend is Unstoppable. This is the Tony Scott film that stars Denzel Washington and Chris Pine. Oof. The Runaway Train, based on a true story.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow.
If it wasn't based on a true story, I would think this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Now, knowing it now, it's still ridiculous, but you go, well, at least it actually happened.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is I was like, I was talking to my mom about it the other day, and you know, I was like, do you recall this, something like this ever happening? She's like, oh yeah, I remember that. She goes, I remember that happening. Yeah, it was crazy. So I remember watching that all on the news and stuff. I'm like, I don't recall anything like this at all. But yeah, apparently this really happened. I don't know.
I knew a little while ago. I want to say like early 2000s.
Okay.
But maybe like 2002 or something. I could be wrong about that. I could be totally off. I could be off by 15 years. But, that's just the number that
sticks in my head.
It could
be 1955. So. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw this movie, but I'll talk about it next week, so...
Okay.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah.
So, you can buy stuff on our Geek Tyrant store. Go to geektyrant.me, where we have t-shirts and glasses and t-shirts and other glasses. Yep.
Indeed.
You can donate if you want to help support the site and keep us running and keep things going. You can donate money at geektyrant.com/donate. I believe no one's donated yet. And that's okay.
That's
we're
funny.
We're still doing it. But donations would definitely help, I'm just saying. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and if you do listen to this on iTunes, please leave a review. Do something, you know? Let us know if we can do anything better, things that you want to hear or talk about, anything like that. Give us some ideas. We're open to ideas, so yeah, please feel free to do that.
You can also email geektyrant@gmail.com yes. with comments and such if you want.
Definitely. Fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans, and you can follow us on Twitter at @geektyrant. And Ben, why don't you tell them about your awesome show?
Thank you, sir. The Not Just New Movies podcast, you can track that down in iTunes and on Facebook as well. You can find it at notjustnewmovies.com.
Right on.
Oh, I just want to add something. I don't know who's in charge of these things, but I have been looking everywhere for a movie replica of the identity disc in Tron Legacy, and all I've been able to find is a cheap plastic toy. Why don't they have like a collector's like
$200 one
like,
or something?
Badass one. The closest thing I can find is like a like an iPod dock. What's happened with their merchandise?
Like, have you checked out the? I have no idea if it's there or not. I'm just asking. Have you checked the Disney has opened up a Tron retail store?
Yes, it's supposed to be opening on the 19th of November, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and all they are going to be selling is Tron movie stuff.
Yeah, I've looked at what they're going to be selling. I'm surprised. The thing is, like,
as if it's not there, they're not making it.
Yeah, which seems like a big misstep in terms of like selling a ton of those. Although, who knows? Maybe they're waiting to see how it does and then come out with the collectibles.
Like, or maybe you're the only person.
Maybe I'm the only guy who wants a Tron identity disc that's like $200 that lights up, and you can't throw it.
Just I want to live in my computer.
It just seems like they. I mean, they have a toy one, but like.
I would feel like that. It's got to be on the way.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. So if you find a Tron disc, identity disc, email us. Let us know where to find it.
Yes.
So Mazer can go get one. We'd really appreciate that. Mazer would definitely appreciate that.
Yeah.
Then we'll have disc battles.
Yeah.
That will be fun.
We need to take photos of that.
of the disc battles? The Geek Tyrant disc battles?
Yeah. Disc wars. Right. Geek Tyrant style.
Maybe we'll do that for our 100th episode.
Awesome. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us this evening, day, afternoon. You're probably at work listening to this, most likely. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening in. Don't forget to leave us a review. Hit us up with any tips you might have. Thank you for coming to the website and reading our stuff. We appreciate it. We appreciate everything you guys have been doing for us, all your support. It's been great. And just so you know, we got a couple contests real quick before we end. Got a couple contests out there. Right now, we're giving away 3 Millennium Falcon owner manuals.
What?
We're giving away. There's a Millennium Falcon owner manual book that has been released, and we are giving away 3 copies of that. It's actually pretty cool. I have a copy of it.
Sweet.
And it's awesome. You know. Yeah. Tells you everything you want to know about the Millennium Falcon. If you wanted to build one, you could probably use this to build one yourself. How awesome is that? So just search contests on the site. It should pop up there, and just enter on that. And tomorrow I'm launching a contest giving away a Grown-Ups DVD.
All right, there we go.
So
Kevin Smith or Kevin James, potential best supporting actor.
You know, I'm very curious to see if we'll be able to give away this one DVD.
I'm sure you will.
So we'll see. You know, it's just someone doesn't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
right?
I mean, the holidays are coming up. You know, it's a good gift if
there
nothing else.
Exactly. So. And we have another contest coming up within the next week. We're going to be giving away a Blu-ray disc set of the first season of Spartacus, along with a PlayStation 3.
Wow, that's freaking huge.
Yeah. So look out for that. Other than that, keep coming to the site. Thanks for listening, and have a great day, night, evening, afternoon.
Bye.
Chill.